frustrating and confusing search for vaccines continues. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. It has been another week of very limited supply and overwhelming demand for COVID-19 vaccinations in South Florida.
We're all in the vaccine hunt business until we can meet the needs of those who are desperate to get the shots.
Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava tells us the county is not holding back second doses. In Palm Beach County, a commissioner there says she's disgusted the governor put Publix in charge of vaccinations. Meantime, a Broward County couple's Facebook group aims to help people navigate who and when and where to get those doses.
The purpose of the group is to get vaccination information to people who want and need the information.
The South Florida Roundup made possible by Willie the Bee Man, bee removal specialist. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio. Fewer people in South Florida received their first COVID-19 vaccine dose this week compared to a week earlier. The number of first dose shots is dropping. Through Thursday, almost 79,000 people received their first dose, according to data from the State Department of Health. That's down from over 125,000 people getting their first shots a week earlier. Hospitals, county, state distribution sites, medical offices, and Publix in Palm Beach County are where people can get appointments to get their shots, if they can squeeze in those appointments. Coming up, we'll talk about using Publix in Palm Beach County and how social media is helping some folks navigate the confusing and frustrating ways to get signed up for doses. You can tell us your story. Have you gotten vaccinated? Do you have an appointment? Maybe you've tried to get one for a family member, a friend, or a neighbor. Have they been able to sign up to get vaccinated? Share your story with us. 800-743-WLRN. 800-743-9576. You can also tweet us your story at WLRN on Twitter. Your calls and tweets coming up in just a few minutes. The falloff in vaccinations this week was largest in Miami-Dade County, which saw first-time vaccinations fall 42% compared to mid-January, with fewer than 25,000 people getting shots in the most populated county in the state. We spoke with Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava Friday morning. Mayor Levine-Cava, welcome back to the South Florida Roundup. Will the county be getting any more vaccine in the week ahead? Do you know?
We have been told to expect more vaccine, so we are planning accordingly, but we never book appointments until the vaccine is in hand.
Any idea how many doses will be coming to the county?
Yeah, we received 2,900 for this week, which we provided some to Miami Beach for homebound seniors, and we will plan the same this coming week as well. 2,900, 500 to Miami Beach, and the rest to be divided up among our pods and our particular outreach.
How do you make decisions around allocation of that 2,900 supply about how many go to the beach, how many go to Zoo Miami, how many go to other distribution points that the county operates?
Yeah, well, we're looking across the community to look at everybody that is distributing vaccine to make sure that our efforts are complementary and that we are focusing on people who have less access. So we are doing homebound seniors as well through our public housing sites, those who cannot get out. We're also transporting public housing residents who can get out. We're also going to homebound service recipients of the county. So we have a number of ways that we address it. We're focusing as well on our 65 plus county employees and healthcare workers who've not been able to get the vaccine through other means.
Sounds like an awful lot of demand for very little supply, Madam Mayor.
Oh, yes. The demand is so impressive, and we just need more vaccine. We are ready to quadruple the delivery in Miami-Dade County across all of our distribution sites. And we want it. We need it. We're clamoring for it from the federal government and from the state government.
Is the county holding back second doses, as the state Surgeon General Scott Rifke said to this week?
No, we are not, because we've been assured that second doses are coming, and second doses have been coming. So we want everybody to feel confident that the planning that was presented to us is legitimate and second doses are separate and apart from first doses.
Do you risk somehow going counter to the DeSantis administration in Florida if the county is not holding back those second doses?
We have not been directed to hold back second doses, and we're doing what we think is prudent given the situation. We're also scheduling the second doses with confidence that it's coming, and we have administered many second doses.
The 2,900 dose supply that you're expecting in the week ahead, you mentioned that's about the same as what the county experienced this week. Is that on top of other supply to Jackson, to
other
hospital systems and Walgreens CVS?
Yeah, so currently the state is the primary distributor at Hard Rock, Marlins, and at Jackson. So Jackson is considered a state site with its three locations. And we, of course, are working with Jackson to identify community groups, faith-based groups, others that can be intermediaries to find people who cannot get on the computer or have difficulty accessing the newer phone service. So we're working together across the county to get this job done.
The 2,900 shot allotment to the county, does that come through the Jackson, the hospital system?
It's delivered to the Department of Health, and we pick it up from there.
You've said your top priority is getting shots in arms. Should there be a residency requirement?
Well, we have now the Florida, living Florida requirement. I think that's very appropriate. The issue of crossing county lines is a tricky one. People do come and go, and the important thing is to create as much immunity as we possibly can. So at the current time, there is no county residency requirement, just that people have an address in Florida.
Since last Saturday, you have required hospitals, cities, anyone providing vaccines in Miami-Dade County to report supply, appointments, information like race, age, home zip codes to folks getting shots. What have you learned in the week since putting that in place?
Yeah, we're working with the various sites to get us that information. And we hope that by next week, we'll be able to start reporting out some good data. But the point of all of this is to be the central command post for vaccine distribution. We are in a state of emergency. I am the incident commander, and the County Office of Emergency Management is set up to be the central point of coordination. We do that for hurricanes. We do that for all emergencies. Also, we are going to be producing a plan for future distribution when, God willing, the supply will increase sufficiently. So we are going to be prepared to deliver across the community and communicate effectively with the public.
Have you been getting that information in the week that order's been in force?
Yes, we have been getting in the information, and we're working with the different groups to make sure that they're providing it in the best possible way.
Can you share with us any early learnings as you've seen the data?
No, it's a little early to say. We need to get in some more data and make sure that we're getting it in the correct format.
Are the hospitals and other distribution points willingly giving this information?
Yes, we're having good cooperation, just as we have for reporting the hospitals on the beds and the admissions and the ICU, et cetera. So it's similar to that, and we're just getting everybody into the groove.
Let me ask about a story from a week ago when it was learned that Jackson Health had reserved 100 vaccination slots for each of the 13 county commissioners, 1,300 for your office. Your office turned those over to the County Emergency Management Office. Is that correct?
Yes. So our intention was to work with community groups. And because the Office of Emergency Management is already set up with a network of community groups because of emergency planning, that seemed the very, very best way to identify people who are most at risk. For example, people register with OEM for hurricanes if they need special assistance. So these are very much the kinds of people that we are reaching.
Some other commissioners rejected the offer. Others accepted them and are allocating them in some way, shape, or form. Was it the right thing to do for Jackson to reserve these slots for elected officials?
I think Jackson is working hard and has done a good job of finding those who were less able or willing to sign up through the internet system. And I think that all of their efforts were with that intention. So the commissioners that have activated those slots have done it in conjunction with community groups to make sure that those who are hard to reach are getting the shots.
What's the message to the community, Madam Mayor, as you're looking at the next week ahead with your allotment, but the next month or next several months ahead in terms of this vaccine distribution here in Miami-Dade County?
Yeah, well, we are looking and we will be implementing easier ways to get into the system. We know how frustrating it has been for people to get access to these limited vaccines. We share their pain. I'm daily responding to all kinds of communications with people who just are not sure where to turn. It's been a very, very difficult situation.
I know the county has opened up a phone number, for instance. You know, it was just a few weeks ago where folks were waiting for a tweet from you to hear whether or not new appointments would be opened up. And now the state has its own website where you can select your county. So there's still lots of communication happening. And while there's new pathways to get information, that could also be complex.
Yeah, well, that's why we created early on the centralized information portal, miamidade.gov/vaccine. And all of the announcements have routed through there. When the state opens up, when Jackson opens up, when anybody opens up slots, we've put it up. You know, obviously, sometimes it's time sensitive because when you open up a few thousand slots, they're gone in 15 minutes. So it's been extremely frustrating for everyone. So we are going to be launching a system where people can register once, and then they will not have to be refreshing their browser. They will not have to be repeatedly calling. That is going to be rolled out this coming week.
How will folks sign up for that list?
Yeah, we'll be putting out the announcement next week. And we'll be broadly publicizing it.
Will it be an online form to fill out, for instance?
There will be multiple ways to sign up.
Today is your first State of the County address as mayor. What is the state of Miami-Dade County?
Well, I believe it's very strong. And that despite the fact that we are living through the most difficult days of my lifetime. And that is because of the resilience of our people. We have risen to address these challenges before, and we are ready, willing, and able to do so again.
Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava.
Thank you, Tom.
You are listening to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Give us a call, 800-743-WLRN, talking about vaccinations this week in South Florida, 800-743-9576. Conversation on social media on Twitter. You can find it at WLRN. Armin is in Boca Raton. Armin, thanks for calling in. You're on the radio.
Yes, hi. Thank you for letting me speak. I'm a physician, and my wife is a physician as well. And I'm quite disappointed at the way the distribution of vaccines is going, and the physicians are completely left out of the loop. You would think that they would include us at determining or identifying high-risk groups and getting vaccine to them. I am a nephrologist, and I have a number of dialysis patients. None of them have received the vaccine because they can't. They are not able people to get on the phone, on the website, staying in line. It's really disappointing that the system, the way it's designed right now, is actually it's stacked against sick people. Because yeah. If you're sick, you're not going to be able to stand in line. You don't have access to the internet. You cannot be on the phone line all day long when you're on dialysis. And we still yet to receive one single dose.
Armin, I've heard some stories of primary care physicians.
Yeah, my wife is a primary care physician. She applied. She has yet to receive a single dose.
Has she requested any?
Yes.
And has not received any. And you're working and in Boca Raton is where your practices are?
We called Palm Beach County of Health. We called Florida Shots. They say, we'll call you when we have the vaccine for you. Right. That's the answer. There's no timeline. We get called by the patients. Patients are upset at us. Because they're telling us, doctor, you cannot help me. And I don't know what to tell them. My answer to them is to call your governor.
Hmm. Armin, thank you for sharing that perspective. A physician in Boca Raton here on the South Florida Roundup, 800-743-WLRN to share your story. Palm Beach County, where Armin was calling from there, did see the highest number of first-time vaccinations among South Florida counties this week, almost 30,000 people receiving their first doses in Palm Beach County. 67 Publix pharmacies in that county are where most people get their shots under a plan announced by Governor Ron DeSantis. It's a strategy that Palm Beach County Commissioner Melissa McKinley called disgusting this week.
I'm incensed right now that we are dealing with a situation in a county as large as ours, geographically and by population, where more than half of our county is geographically is located in an area not serviced at all by a single Publix.
Commissioner McKinley joins us now live on this Friday here on the South Florida Roundup. Commissioner, welcome to the program. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Good afternoon.
What's the problem with relying on Publix for vaccine distribution? It has infrastructure in place. It has pharmacies in place.
And that's fantastic for, you know, the 90% of our population in Palm Beach County that lives within a mile and a half of a Publix. The problem is 10% of our population does not. And the majority of that 10%, I would argue about 9.5% of it, is located in my district in the far western reaches of Palm Beach County surrounding Lake Okeechobee.
So there we're talking about communities like Belglade, for instance.
Yes, Belglade, South Bay, Pahokee, Canal Point, Lake Harbor.
Are there distribution points in those communities, near those communities, that are not Publix?
You know, we've had a good partnership with the Florida Department of Health and our Palm Beach County Healthcare District. They've been doing a very small operation in Belglade servicing the community. But what we heard this week from our local, you know, Florida Department of Health director, Dr. Alina Alonzo, was she'd been told that the entire allocation of vaccines for Palm Beach County were going to be redistributed solely to Publix per a pilot program that the governor decided to set up for our county.
So no more supply for how long to the State Department of Health County Division in Palm Beach County? Any idea, Commissioner?
Well, you know, I'll respond to that, and then I do have some good news. This whole distribution plan in the state of Florida seems to be changing by the hour. You know, we weren't given any date. We were told that this, of course, is a pilot project. I would assume if the governor found it to be successful, that he would continue that. I did reach out and spoke with Jared Moskowitz, who is, you know, of course, our Division of Emergency Management Director for Florida and handling the logistics of this distribution. He called me about 45 minutes ago to let me know that he would be diverting a portion of the vaccines allocated for Publix to the health department and the healthcare district to serve the communities that are not serviced by a Publix pharmacy. So that is fabulous news, hot off the press, but we shouldn't have had that conversation in the first place.
So take us back to this conversation here on this Friday afternoon. This must have been about 12:30 p.m. Discussing the distribution of vaccine in Palm Beach County. As you mentioned earlier in the week, the county health department informed you and the public that 100% of vaccines that were due to come in were being diverted to the 67 Publix in Palm Beach County. And now what you're saying is that you've heard from the state emergency management director that a portion of those vaccines will be diverted back to the state public health department in Palm Beach County, directed particularly into your district.
Correct. Correct. You know, and Tom, I'm so excited to be able to share that news. It's been a very long week.
How many doses, Commissioner?
He didn't give me a specific number. I'm sure that news will become public in the time being. But it's frustrating to even have had to have that conversation. You know, Palm Beach County.
Did you speak pardon for the interruption, Commissioner. I just want to get more of the anatomy of how this came together. Had you spoken to Director Moskowitz prior to today at 12:30?
Yes.
And what did you tell him or request from him?
You know, my conversation with Director Moskowitz was on Monday, prior to learning on Tuesday of the governor's decision on the pilot project. You know, we knew that the county requested to the governor, the county staff asked the governor, hey, you know, if you're going to choose your first large urban county to distribute vaccines through Publix, we'd love for you to consider us. At no point did we ever fathom the idea that it would be 100% a Publix operation. We simply wanted the option for our constituents. So when I spoke with Director Moskowitz on Monday, I said, hey, I just want you to be aware, you know, we don't have any Publix in the Glades community. And so he said, looking into that. And then on Tuesday, I find out that Publix is about to, you know, is going to be the sole distributor. So I was very happy to have that phone call from him today saying, hey, we're going to step back a little bit and make sure that the health department and the healthcare district can provide vaccines in your district.
Had there been any communication with you, your office, or the county commission with the director or the governor since the announcement of the Publix allotment in Palm Beach County?
I can only speak for myself. The only communication I've had is with Director Moskowitz. I have not spoken to anybody in the governor's office. You know, the governor did respond to my comments from my commission meeting, so my guess is they heard my comments.
That's pretty obvious. We're speaking with Palm Beach County Commissioner Melissa McKinley, who just told us here live that that she just learned within the past hour that the state will be re-diverting some vaccine allotments from the Publix supply in Palm Beach County to the county health department for distribution in the western reaches of Palm Beach County. You don't know yet how many vaccines. Do you know when?
I haven't been given all of those details. My assumption would be the next distribution that comes to the county. And we usually learn about what we're getting the following week, sometime over the weekend. So I'll follow up with the health department director and get that information, but he did not provide that to me.
And is the county division of the State Department of Health ready to accept whatever vaccine supply may come out to the western communities there?
I have no doubt that the Florida Department of Health Palm Beach office and the healthcare district of Palm Beach will be able to distribute those efficiently. And the county, we actually haven't been asked yet to set up any large-scale operations, but we're ready. We've got our plans ready to roll out. We just need, like the mayor of Miami-Dade County just said, we just need the vaccines.
Well, speaking of vaccines, looking at the data from the State Department of Health Commissioner, Palm Beach County is doing the best of any county in South Florida in terms of the number of people getting first-time doses. Last week, 45,000 people in Palm Beach County received first-time doses, the most of any of the four counties in South Florida. This week, that dropped significantly to just below 30,000, but yet it was still the most first-time doses given out, distributed, of any of the four South Florida counties.
Well, that's fantastic. I understand that when the Publix pharmacies are doing their vaccination programs, they're allotting about 60 appointments a day. So there's no doubt that the partnership with Publix has been beneficial. We just need to make sure that everybody in Palm Beach County has access. And as I pointed out before, this most recent decision in the last hour, a large area of our county didn't have access.
Would you like to see a residency requirement for Palm Beach County vaccine distribution?
You know, I share, you know, Mayor Levine Cava's comments on that. I was listening to her before you guys patched me in. It's important to build immunity in the state of Florida. I would love, You know, I like the idea of limiting it to Florida residents. I do have some grave concerns, though. I've got a large migrant population, a large agricultural, you know, community, and I worry that the fear of those residency requirements might keep people most at risk from seeking a vaccine. So we need to be very careful on how much we advocate for those residency requirements to make sure we're not further alienating vulnerable populations.
Commissioner McKinley, thanks for spending the time with us. Thanks for sharing the news about the vaccine redistribution that's happening or will be happening there in your district in Western Palm Beach County.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time, Tom.
Melissa McKinley with us, Palm Beach County Commissioner. Stick with us. More to come on the roundup. How a Broward couple is using social media to help people get vaccinated. Stick with us here on the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. We're back on the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Phone numbers, voicemails, emails, website forms, just trying to navigate how to get an appointment to be vaccinated is tough. And then there's the challenge of actually securing an appointment to roll up your sleeve for a dose. The pandemic has canceled Catherine Quirk's and Russ Schwartz's wedding plans three times. She's a nurse at Broward Health Medical in Fort Lauderdale. He's an elementary school principal in Davie. They're not social media influencers, but they created a Facebook group that has become a place for people to find and share information about how to get vaccinated in South Florida. It's called South Florida COVID-19 Vaccination Info, and more than 100 volunteers are helping. We spoke with them Thursday night. Catherine, Russ, thanks for your time today. What was the spark, Catherine, that led you to create this Facebook group?
What really started it for us was when my own hospital, Broward Health Medical Center, launched their vaccine to the public. And what happened very quickly, really overnight, was with the launch, they opened up phone lines in the morning to make appointments. And probably within maybe an hour, we almost were unable to make internal phone calls because there were so many calls coming in and all of these appointments went out so fast. And when I was notified initially through my email that this was going to be happening, I tried to put out a post on my own Facebook page to let anybody that I knew, in particular Russ's parents, know about what was happening. And unfortunately, nobody that I knew was able to get in and get an appointment. And so as we were sitting on the couch New Year's Day, Russ and I really started talking about that this was going to be how the rollout went to the public and thinking about if a phone line could get shut down that quickly and you really needed to have technology background to try and figure out how to make the call and get in, then more than likely there would be a lot of people struggling with it. And so we thought, wouldn't it be great to create a South Florida Facebook group that we could get out the notifications as quickly as possible about when the different organizations were going to release the vaccine to the general public so that we could help people with kind of a one-stop shop.
How much time, Catherine, are you dedicating to kind of managing that flow of information each day, because so much of that information is so volatile?
It has truly become a second job for the both of us. I mean, we go to work, we work very hard in our full-time day jobs. And then at night we come home, we say hi to our kids and make sure they've had a good day. And then we're off and running with, you know, our Facebook group that we've created. Thankfully, we've been able to develop a really core group of amazing volunteers. Fortunately, a lot of them have more time to kind of spend during those daytime hours when Russ and I are working. And they do an amazing job reaching out to people and really monitoring the group and making sure that there isn't the political stuff going on or that there isn't, you know, just arguing or repeated posts that may clog up the line. So
social media is not known for nuance, to put it politely, or diplomacy for that matter, Russ. How do you kind of manage and police that, not only the politics, but the conspiracy theories around politics and science that have infiltrated many social media platforms?
From day one, we decided, you know, me and Catherine, we kind of thought this up, was that that wasn't going to be a part of our community. We just kind of put that ground rule out at the very beginning, and we do go back to it and just do those reminders every couple of days. The purpose of the group is to get vaccination information to people who want and need the information. If you don't want and need the information, then you don't really need to be there. And if you are, you know, jumping on the page and posting these conspiracy theories or debating with people, then you could be, we'll remove you, because that's not the purpose of this page.
How does it work? If someone has a question or a concern or difficulty in trying to figure out how to navigate the very complex vaccination distribution systems, plural, right, that have been set up, how does it work?
You know, there's a couple of different avenues here. The first one is that we're providing, you know, real-time verified information on each of these systems.
And Russ, who's providing that information that's been verified?
From the agencies, from whoever's posting it. It's whether from, you know, the county websites or their Twitter accounts, wherever that verified source is.
So we'd call those primary sources, firsthand sources. Got it. Okay.
So we're basically just taking that and we're, you know, sending it as they're writing it, sending it exactly out, copying and pasting basically, so that, you know, someone who is 80, 90 years old, who doesn't have a Twitter account, who doesn't know where to go to get the Department of Health information on the website, they get it all in this one spot. There's a big disconnect between all these systems and this information, and mainly the senior community, because they aren't connected in all these different ways. What we're seeing is that we're having a lot of seniors join Facebook and join this group. We're having a lot of seniors who are getting the information from a child or grandchild who lives possibly in New York or in another part of the country. And that child or grandchild's on and getting the information that we're providing through the Facebook page, and then getting it back to their, you know, to their grandparent and getting them, you know, the assistance, or getting them an appointment. To kind of tie it all together, if they're unable to use it, which we have a large population who just doesn't have the skills and knowledge to do that, we have developed this team of about 140 people at this point who are there at any moment to basically answer a question or to try to help get them an appointment. Basically, we have all these volunteers who are there to support them and do it for them, and then call them back and say, hey, guess what? Your appointment's on Saturday at 1:00. And at that point, the tears really usually start falling.
If someone listening was interested in volunteering, how would they go about doing that, Catherine?
What they can do is we do have on our group, we do have a volunteer sign up. And currently, I think we probably have somewhere between 140 to 150 volunteers. You know, we are still somewhat new in this. We are 3 weeks in. But, you know, as we're going, we are really, you know, looking for what people's passion is. I mean, some people really want to like stay in tune to these sites. They really want to become, you know, the Miami-Dade County specialist, where they can share about Jackson or another hospital that's going to be opening up, or they really know how the Hard Rock system works, so they can research for us and share with the group. Other groups reaching out to the people that need assistance with booking appointments, that really need the help. And then we also have that list of many, many people that still need help, where we have people calling them just to ask them, do you still need help? You know, how far can you drive? Are you limited to a 5-mile radius? And then we also definitely need help with moderating our Facebook page to keep it what we started it as.
After Hurricane Irma, there was a lot of conversation and a lot of focus around community and community organizations as the first layer of resiliency. How do you think your Facebook group reflects that here at this moment of real importance and confusion regarding the vaccination distribution?
That has been probably that, not probably, it has been the most inspiring part of this whole thing. The amount of support that we see on the page for strangers is remarkable. I think it was a day or two ago, there was a post that someone put up that they were trying to get an appointment and they were frustrated and, you know, they were let down, and they, I think, gave a little information about, you know, how old they were and some conditions that he might have had. And within 3 hours, there was, and I didn't see it until 3 hours after the post went up. After the 3 hours went by, there were 120 comments, and I just, you know, clicked on it. It was one of the posts I randomly clicked on, and I scrolled through them, and there wasn't one negative comment in those 120 posts or comments. They were all in support, encouraging, helping, offering suggestions. You know, what time you should call, what website you should go to, and just basically all the things that we did at the beginning when the group was small. We had 120 people that we've never met before. We don't know who they are. They don't know each other, and they were offering the same support and advice that we did at the onset of this. So we see that over and over again. And we met a gentleman who's 90 years old, and he had, you know, his career, he was a singer, and he told us his whole life story, and we got to know him really well, and he got his vaccine, and, you know, he sent us a picture after he got it, and just making those connections it's been inspiring, truthfully. And that's just one story. There's so many. When you go on the page and you click on any of these posts, it's just all positive. And there are so many people who have actually, you know, that we've helped get a vaccine, they've got it, and now they're helping other people. And they haven't left the page, and they've become volunteers, and they're, you know, booking appointments for other people. I think part of it also is people are realizing that they're not in it alone. And they're also realizing that each person that gets a vaccine is one step closer for this being over.
That's Russ Schwartz and his fiancee, Catherine Quirk. They started the Facebook group South Florida COVID-19 Vaccination Info to help share information about when and where and how to get vaccinated in South Florida. Both have been touched by the virus. Quirk's dad and stepmom have had it, and Schwartz's dad and brother were infected. As for their wedding, they have rescheduled it for the fourth time. Flag Day, June 14th, is their new wedding date. Still to come, how has the pandemic affected housing affordability in South Florida? Home prices continue going up. Are you looking to buy a home or a condominium? Are you renting? Share your story with us now, 800-743-9576, 800-743-9576, or at WLRN on Twitter. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting public media. Home prices keep climbing across the region. Single-family homes and condominium prices saw double-digit increases over the past year. The pandemic economy has helped fuel buying interest in real estate. There are the traditional buyers looking to escape cold weather up north, and now with all the work-from-home practices in place, why not do it here in sunny South Florida instead of snowy New England or Philadelphia or New York? Locals, after being cooped up in condominiums for months, maybe they're looking for more space and a yard. Low mortgage rates and a tight supply of homes also have helped boost prices. So what does this mean for a region that already was grappling with an affordability problem before the pandemic? Have you bought a home or a condominium during this public health crisis, or maybe tried to? What about renters? What are you experiencing? Has your rent changed? 800-743-WLRN. We want to hear a little bit of talk of real estate in the pandemic and the impact here in South Florida. 800-743-9576, live on this Friday afternoon. Phone lines are open, waiting for you. 800-743-9576 or on Twitter at WLRN. Brian Bandel is back with us here on the Roundup. Brian writes about real estate for the South Florida Business Journal. Always nice to have you, sir. So describe the regional housing market today.
Hi, Tom. There's really a feeding frenzy for housing in South Florida right now. It started with single-family homes, and now it's spilled over into condos. Sales are up over 20% from a year ago, and for single-family homes especially, there's very little supply. About the average home is selling about 19 days after being listed, sometimes even faster than that. So there's a frenzy, a lot of people trying to buy, not enough on the market, and it's pushing up prices.
Just for comparison's sake, 19 days is less time between two doses of COVID-19 vaccines.
Oh, yeah. It's really fast, rapid, and it's competitive, too. A lot of people, realtors, tell me that not only are they getting multiple offers, they're getting bidding wars, and that sometimes they'll sell it for $20,000 more than they even listed it for because the buyers are fighting over it.
Let me bring in Annie Lord now. She is the executive director at Miami Homes for All. Annie, welcome back to WLRN. Nice to have you.
Thanks so much, Tom. Great to be here.
Yeah. How do you think the pandemic has affected affordability?
Well, it's certainly the dynamic that you've described, is a real force. You know, people are interested in buying homes. It is putting pressure on the homeownership market. But we also are seeing an impact on the rental market. Hmm. And some of that has to do with the impact of job loss and income interruption due to the pandemic that has strained renters and ultimately put many properties into financial distress. And so just like in the home ownership and like the single family home ownership market, you're seeing increased interest and, you know, opportunities for real estate developers and investors to buy multifamily properties that have rental housing in them.
Yeah. And what's been the impact then on the actual rate of the lease rates, the rental rates, the monthly number that renters have to come up with?
Well, it's hard. That's hard to say for me. But what I would say is what we're seeing is a lot of expectation of the folks being evicted. And the census at the beginning of the pandemic began conducting a survey they call the Housing Pulse Survey, which is a measure of people's expectations of either being foreclosed on or evicted. And that those numbers have been very, very high.
Yeah, there is a moratorium in place for evictions and foreclosures that perhaps have been initiated since mid-March. Annie, what do you think the role of that moratorium on evictions is playing in the market?
Actually, an enormous role. We did see, so to give you a sense of the magnitude, we are seeing numbers for Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and Pompano area in the many tens of thousands. And in fact, towards the end of last year, we had about, in that area, 180,000 people who expected to be evicted in the upcoming 2 months. And then we saw in January, that number decline to about 86,000. So I think the moratorium and its extension played a significant role, although this is for early January. But certainly people's expectations of the moratorium being extended, people's expectation of there being rental assistance, all these things I think have had a huge impact on people's fears.
Annie Lord is the executive director at Miami Homes for All. Stick with us, Annie. Brian Bandel, also still with us, writes about real estate and has done it for years at the South Florida Business Journal. We're talking about the pandemic effect on Miami residential real estate, homes, single-family homes, condominiums, also rental apartments, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Brian and Annie, Mike in Fort Lauderdale is joining us. Mike, sounds like you have become a homeowner during the pandemic.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Sure. Thanks for calling.
Yes, last August, actually, in the middle of the pandemic, I was in the market for a home and purchased a home here in Oakland Park in the Fort Lauderdale area. And since then, have been renting to a few friends of mine. They became my roommates to help me pay this mortgage. Unfortunately, I mean, I'm hoping things stay, you know, on the up and up, because I'm not exactly sure what would happen if they weren't able to pay their rent and therefore I wasn't able to make my mortgage. I'm kind of curious about what protections are in place for a guy like me who's renting to a couple people, a new homeowner here in the area.
Yeah, I'll put that to Annie and Brian in a second. Let me just make sure I understand, Mike. You own the home. You live in the home. Is that right?
Yep. So I own the home. Okay. I live in the home, and then I rent to two friends who are helping me take care of it.
Yeah, makes sense. So not an investment property. That's the primary home for Mike. Brian, what do you know about any kind of assistance, protection, or what Mike should kind of be on the lookout for, given he's renting some rooms to some tenants to help pay the bills?
First of all, remember, the moratorium is for people who are impacted by the pandemic. So they would have to prove that their inability to pay the rent is due to the pandemic, not some other factor. So if it was due to the pandemic, then they might be able to raise that issue with you. Then the other question is did you formalize the lease with documents and paperwork, all that, or was it more of a handshake agreement? If it's a handshake agreement, it'll probably be harder for them to say, the eviction moratorium should work because it wasn't on paper in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, that's on the eviction side. And then, you know, if Mike has trouble paying that mortgage with the bank, Brian, this region of the country has a lot of experience and maybe a short memory when it comes to the pain of home foreclosures.
But then that would be a problem because it wouldn't be his income that's affected. It's their income. So
right. He
would have to try and make an argument to the bank. My tenants lost their income because of the pandemic, and therefore you can't evict me. But again, that might be a harder argument to make to the bank, because normally they you would go to them and say this has to do with directly related to the pandemic. And then, of course, it all depends who your bank is.
Yeah.
You know, and are they a lender like Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac that has a policy, or are they one that doesn't have a policy? But remember, just because there's a moratorium on eviction and foreclosure doesn't mean you don't owe the money. You still have to pay eventually.
Yeah, it's deferred payment. It's not it's deferred and delayed. It's not erased or eliminated. Annie Lord, let me ask you, you hear Mike there buying a home, right, becoming a homeowner, but also needing tenants to help pay that mortgage each and every month. How prevalent are stories like that you've come across?
Increasingly prevalent. And I would also say, and Brian is quite right, if there's a formalized, lease agreement, then that could be covered by the moratorium. But a lot of people live without leases or with leases that have expired. And so they're, it's commonly known as month-to-month tenancy. Mm-hmm. And the moratorium doesn't cover that. And so you're seeing a lot of, it sounds like Mike's a really great landlord. He's helping his buddies. He's making it work. But I think most landlords, are trying to do the best that they can. But it's really difficult if these leases, these contracts lapse. And then you've got a lot of people with very little recourse. I think fortunately a lot of policymakers at all levels, local, state, federal, are aware of this, gap. And even locally, I believe last week or the week prior, Miami-Dade County County Commission passed an ordinance that allows for the extension of the notice period, right? So if Mike ever had to evict one of his friends or if they didn't have a lease agreement, then now, he can give them 30 days notice. Now they have to pay the rent for 30 days.
But,
it used to be 15 days. So I really do see kind of some orientation by policymakers towards trying to ease these relationships, ease transitions that may or may not have to happen.
Yeah. Well, Annie, what you talk about is in Miami-Dade County, for Mike and Fort Lauderdale, obviously you want to check the own Broward County and Fort Lauderdale statutes. One more quick call here, less than 90 seconds left, but I want to bring in another Mike, this one in Miami. Mike, ask your question, make your point quick so we can get to it, please.
Well, if we suddenly have landlords evicting 80,000 people, we now have 80,000 people with evictions on their records, and how will that affect the rental market? It seems like the landlords may be shooting themselves in the foot.
Annie, how about that kind of credit risk that could pose for the rental market?
Enormous. There's undoubtedly the policy play here at all levels is to try to keep people in place. It's also there. I think Brian could probably speak to the larger real estate market impact if you do see that inundation of evictions that we're all worried about. But undoubtedly, what we need to do is help people stay in place, pay back their landlords. Landlords can't be made to bear the burden here alone. But when we avoid things that, credit records and eviction records that follow people around for a very long time, and it makes it hard for them to find another place to live, but also to get a job and many other things.
Yeah. Annie Lord, executive director.
They'll be able to find another place, but it'll be more expensive. All credit. They'll have to put more money down when they get an apartment. Yeah. When they get loans, they'll have to pay more. You know, if they get a car, they'll have to pay higher interest rate.
Yeah.
Just life will be a lot more expensive when your credit score is worse.
Brian Bandel, South Florida Business Journal, and Annie Lord, executive director of Miami Homes for All. Annie and Brian, thanks for your time here on the South Florida Roundup. Our program is produced by Denise Royal. Engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Our digital editor is Lance Dixon. Terrence Shepard is our news director. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. The WLRN director of radio programming is Jason Zabka. The director of radio operations and the program's technical supervisor is Peter J. Mertz. Richard Ives answers the phones for us each and every week. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tweeting. And above all, thanks for supporting public radio here in South Florida. Our program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.